Innovation, disruption, and big issues. This is Business Game Changers with Sarah Westall.
Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall. Today we are playing our second part of the interview that I did with Michael Schneider. He is going to be continuing to talk about the problems that we have in this country, and then he's going to discuss his run for Congress. He doesn't know for sure whether he's going to run for Congress, but he is strongly leaning in that direction. And if he decides to, there'll be an announcement in a couple weeks. So I think the hint is he is going to be running. So look out for that. And he's going to have a website up about his Congress run. He has a pretty good chance of making it into Congress because in Idaho, the Republicans have a very stronghold there, and the Democrats tend not to spend money in that area. But he has an independent mind, which I really like. I like the people who have independent thinking and ideas. They're not going to just vote with the party. I'm an independent person, and so I'm looking for people that aren't just going to go down with the party line. I'm looking for people who are really going to dive in and think about the issues and vote with their conscience. And what I'm finding is that people who are like that, they might claim they're a Republican or a Libertarian, or they'll claim that they're a Democrat or maybe even pretty socialist minded. But once it gets down to the nitty gritty and on bills, if they're independent thinking and looking at the issues from not from the party standpoint, but what they think is right, it's amazing how they tend to be much more alike than different from each other. Because people who get into office trying to do what's right for people, they'll get rid of these mass incarceration issues. They'll get rid of the things that are taking advantage of people. That's a basic human element that people who care and who have basic ethics, they will get rid of all that, no matter where they sit in the political spectrum. So I'm looking for independent thinkers, people who will go against the party lines and do what's right for the people. People are not going to go into war for arbitrary reasons, like in Syria, where we destroyed one of the most peaceful countries on earth where people could live side by side. We destroyed that country along with our allies, Saudi Arabia and ISIS and whoever else that we were working with. Just terrible that we would side with people like that. And so these independent thinkers, no matter where you are in the political spectrum, will go in and do what's right. They're not going to vote with the party line. And that's what I'm looking for. So let's get back into my interview with Michael Schneider.
And so it's not, and even if we have elected representatives, they don't get to see it either. So it's just a very unfair system for you to have to pay for decisions that not only you don't get to see, but your elected officials don't get to see.
Yeah, yeah. And so why? You know, we need to ask the question, why? We need to be willing to question the Federal Reserve. But, you know, we don't hear about this from the mainstream media. Very few of our politicians question the Federal Reserve. You know, so this needs to become a political issue and part of the political debate. And we need to hear who's pro-Federal Reserve, who's against the Federal Reserve. You know, who wants the system to be changed? Because ultimately, you know, if we lower tax rates a little bit, if we monkey with regulations, if we do all these other things that President Trump wants to talk about, other politicians talk about, it's not going to fundamentally fix our problems, because the heart of our problems, it's the Fed, and it's the Fed's policies and what's the Fed's been doing and how the Fed operates. Until we fix that, we're never going to fundamentally fix our economy.
Do you think that we could do it peacefully? Do you think we could change our entire money system in a peaceful manner? I mean, there might need to be a catastrophe from an economic standpoint, but does it have to get violent? I mean, can we do this peacefully?
Well, I believe so. And I'm not an advocate of violence at all. I don't want to see things get violent in our country at all. I mean, we've seen the shootings of the members of Congress where, you know, that guy took his gun out to the baseball field, tried to kill as many Republican members of Congress as he could. Fortunately, he wasn't a very good shot. And there were some, like, the Capitol Hill police were there. But, you know, our country's already on the verge of some call it civil war. But me, I don't want to see anything of that nature ever happen. I believe that we can change peacefully. And you know what? The election of Donald Trump, whether you're pro-Trump or anti-Trump, whatever you think of Trump, he showed us that, hey, it is possible for someone who's outside the establishment, who the media hates, the establishment hates, to win the presidency. So if he can win the presidency, why can't the rest of us run for other offices and win? He showed us what's possible. And I believe that it would be possible to peacefully not change, just change the Federal Reserve, but our whole system. That ultimately we need another American Revolution, but not one with guns and bullets, but one with pen and ink and more importantly, keyboards and social media and votes and a movement of with radio and television, shows like yours, Sarah, where we're in a battle for hearts and minds, one heart and one mind at a time. Maybe the show we're doing today just convinces a couple more people, helps wake them up, and where the people can understand the truth about the Federal Reserve. They can understand the truth about how our liberties and freedoms are being stripped away from us, about NSA spying, about how they're monitoring us, about, why the income tax is so insidious, about why we need limited government. Because every time government gets bigger, they take more liberty and freedom away from us. And we're supposed to be the land of the free. Our founders wanted to control our freedom and liberty are maximized. So we're in an information war. And if we can win enough hearts and minds, then we start to, and part of it is, hey, we've been battling this for a while, and Trump becoming president, that wouldn't have been possible 10 years ago. So we're seeing a shift. We're seeing people wake up, and it's what I do every day through my websites, through radio, through television, through all the things, my books, through all the things that we do. We're trying to win hearts and minds. But then ultimately, that's not just enough, but we need to start taking the power structures in our society. I'm talking about the legal system. I'm talking about the education system. I'm talking about media. But then I'm also talking about governmental institutions.
So with so much polarization in our country, I would think the media needs to start not... I think some of the media is incenting violence instead of saying, okay, it's okay that we have different ideas and we can debate them, but the whole violence stuff is out of control. Are you seeing that there's some incenting of violence that's going on in our media?
Yeah, and it's by top politicians on the left as well, but also CNN, MSNBC, and they're constantly stirring things up, stirring the pot, and using very inflammatory language. And then you've got things like this play in New York where, you had this character dressed up just like Donald Trump, acting and sounding just like Donald Trump, obviously intended to be Donald Trump, and where he's viciously stabbed with blood going everywhere at the end. And, it's Julius Caesar and the assassination of Julius Caesar, but he's wearing this big dark suit with the long red tie and has hair just like Trump. It's intended to be Trump. And these big media outlets, not only are they not condemning it, but then they continue to fund it. They funded the whole operation, many of them, Time Warner and the New York Times and so forth. Imagine if that was Obama,
any other president. Don't do that to somebody. I mean, we've never seen this level of disrespect to somebody in our highest office ever. Ever.
Yeah. Or Kathy Griffin holding up that mock decapitated head of Trump that was all bloody and whatever.
Even if you don't like him, it's a sign of respect for the office, don't you think?
Oh, it is. It is. And we've seen, and it just wasn't this attack at the baseball field, but we've seen ever since Inauguration Day this pattern of attacks on Republican lawmakers, on conservatives, on Trump supporters. So, they need to be speaking out against this violence instead of constantly stirring it up, constantly fueling the hate. Because, these people, they're not created in a vacuum. This guy who went out and decided to shoot members of Congress, He was a big fan of Rachel Maddow, apparently watched her all the time, and these people are constantly fueling the hate and that the idea that violence is okay. It's not good for our society, but ultimately, and these people are hurting their own political movement because, someone like Kathy Griffin, that image is going to be burned into people's minds forever. And they're going to say, well, is this what the left is all about? Is all they have to offer anger and frustration and violence?
That's not what we're about. Because I know that if people treated Obama like this, I'd be angry. Really would be. And I think a lot of the people that didn't vote for Trump, I've heard some of my friends say, I don't really like Trump, but this is not okay, and that he is our president. All we're doing is hurting ourselves by acting like this.
It is hurting because then it's going to cause people to want to look somewhere else for answers. And so, I don't see any signs that things are going to change. These people who are stirring up hatred and anger and frustration and violence, I think it's going to continue. And I think we're going to see more civil unrest, more anger, more violence. And, it's kind of a chilling time.
Well, how can we mend this? Because we have this going on, but we have a backdrop of a financial catastrophe. So we need really great leadership, I think. I mean, what is your views on how we can mend this? I mean, we have you're talking about the Fed. We're talking about all these financial issues. We're talking about alternative media having good dialogue. Is that enough to mend this?
Well, ultimately, on a fundamental level, we need to learn how to love one another. Even if we disagree, we need to learn how to love those that we disagree with. Instead, we've been trained to hate people that we disagree with, hate the politicians on the other side. But we've got to learn how to love. And that sounds so basic, but it really is what we need. And I'm about to come out with a new book in a couple of weeks, which is going to be all about this, about fundamentally fixing ourselves and fixing our relationships with others and learning how to love and care about one another. And, people want to keep an eye out for my new book about to come out in here in a couple of weeks. But so ultimately, we need to change our own heart attitudes fundamentally. Now, on a broader level, we do need new leadership because, you look at Congress, Sarah. And most members of Congress, Congress has an average approval rating of about 18% right now. I mean, presidents, they're 40, 50, 60%, in that range usually. But Congress, they stayed below 20% for a long time. And people are sick and tired of Congress, where you've got permanent career politicians that seem to stick around forever. And they're always, instead of serving the people who put them into office, Al Franken recently came out with a book where he admitted, a big part of his day, sometimes he'll spend 3 hours a day on the phone raising money for his next campaign, and that's what they do. They're always concerned about, okay, raising more money. What's the next campaign? Schmoozing with the wealthy people and the big donors the special interests who can fund their campaigns with lots of money. And so we need to fundamentally clean up the halls of power of Congress if we're ever going to turn things around on a national level.
Well, do you think we have to get rid of this whole side stuff and, one side or the other? Because realistically, there isn't two sides. I mean, it's not possible for us to have two sides. And there's so many other views, political views that are realistically out there. And I know there's a lot of movements to get more people with different views into Congress, into the Senate. And so it's not just Republican, Democrat, which is kind of a fallacy anyways, where they all vote in the same way. It's to me, it's a joke. There's so many different ways to view things, and we need to stop thinking of it as a game that we have them against us.
Yeah, although, what we're seeing is at one time in early America, there was a consistent and a core set of values and principles that pretty much everyone agreed on. There was, people still had their differences, but fundamentally people viewed things similar in a similar manner. But today we don't have that. Instead, we see more and more of a polarization just of ideas and of concepts. And, you know, where, for example, those on the far left, if you will, they believe in big government. Government's the solution to everything, while people like myself, hey, I want to go back to what our founders intended, which was a very limited federal government, a small federal government transferring as much power back to the states as possible, you know, restoring that constitutional balance of power that our founders intended. And then, and that's the reason they put the 10th Amendment in there, is, you know, for one thing, is to limit the power of the federal government. And then, but then also, I don't want to see gigantic, enormous state governments either, because ultimately, Sarah, I guess I'm very much liberty-minded in that every in America today, in the federal level, we've got hundreds of thousands of laws. But then when you throw in state, local, city, you know, all the other layers of government, you get a grand total of more than you get millions of laws, rules, and regulations. And every single law, rule, or regulation restricts our liberty and freedom in some way. It says something we have to do, something we can't do, something, you know. And so we've got these millions of laws, rules, and regulations restricting us and telling us what we have to do, what we can't do. And so that takes away our liberty and freedom. Every time there's a new government agency, every time a new rule or regulation, liberty and freedom are diminished. And so in my opinion, we've gone swung the pendulum so far over in one direction. I want to swing it back in the other direction, where liberty and freedom are maximized, and where we, you know, we try to minimize. I mean, we're always going to need some laws, and in some ways we want our liberties and freedoms to be restricted. And I'll explain this. For example, it's good to have a law that says we can't go around randomly killing one another. We don't want the freedom to just randomly run around and murder one another. So that's a good law, you know, not to murder one another. But we want some laws, but we don't so want so much that it just suffocates our liberty and freedom to death. And that, I believe that's where we're at today, where liberty and freedom are just being completely suffocated, and we need to swing the pendulum way back in the other direction. While those on the far left, they just want to keep making government bigger, more government agencies, more government solutions. And the more they go in that direction, the less liberty and freedom we have.
Well, we know that in the corporate world, the more you centralize, the more you take away innovation and motivation, and people become more, it's a more controlled process. And you do it with processes that are more simple and that you need to have control over. But when you have knowledge workers and you're trying to be creative and innovative and you want people to be self-motivated and entrepreneurial, you have to flatten the organization as much as you can. Otherwise, it doesn't work. And so it's the same in a society. If you're going to control everything, you're going to just drive out motivation and innovation, and all the things that you claim that you want will be driven out, because that's how it works. You know, there's been so much studies on this, and we have so many examples through, you know, the hundreds of years that we've been studying businesses and organizations. We know how they run. We know that when you centralize, that you create a different environment. And to create people that are self-motivated and creative, you have to push that down, the power structure down, which is how we set up this country. So there are areas where you want that centralized control, but you got to be careful with it. If you do it everywhere, it just drives out that fundamental human desire to be innovative and take the reins yourself.
Yeah, I completely agree with you, Sarah. You know, we need government, and government has a role to play. We, you know, a society without any government, well, then you have anarchy, and that's not what we want. We need government, but government has a role to play. I kind of liken it to like a basketball game where you know, the government plays the role of referee, and you need the lines of the court, you need the rules of the game, you need the referee to enforce the rules. And so you need that structure, and government provides that structure. But I'm sure we've all seen a basketball game or a football game or whatever, where the referees are just blowing a whistle on every play. And it gets to the point where, you know, it's like the game isn't even being played. It's just all about the referees. It's all about the penalties. It's all, you know, it's all about the fouls. And it's like the players aren't even playing the game. And that's, you know, really what I think our society is like today, where and it's just suffocating.
I got to tell you that you're making me laugh because my son had he's in college now, but he had a soccer game. He played soccer and it was such a fun time. But we had this ref that called so many penalties that nobody knew who the penalty was against. I mean, it got so bad where both coaches were like, okay, this is enough. This is just really dumb. And that was an extreme. I've never seen anything that extreme in my life. But you made me think about that. It was a good memory, by the way. But it was ridiculous.
And that's where we're really at today, where, you know, we've got the percentage of Americans that are self-employed is hovering near an all-time low, where the number of small businesses that are being started, it's been decreasing in every presidential administration ever since the days of George Bush Sr., I believe. In each administration, we've seen the number of small businesses being established. It's decreasing because, you know, but that's where the job growth comes in. That's where the innovation comes in. Entrepreneurs, small businesses. And that's what I'm all about. That's what we need to restore. But we're just strangling them out of existence with all the high taxes, rules, regulations, red tape. It's just too, and not just on the federal level either. Sometimes the state and local governments can be the worst of all. We're our society, you know, and this unfortunate thing is that control freaks tend to be attracted
exactly.
to politics.
Exactly. I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah, because control freaks, they say, well, their ultimate dream is to control everyone. You know, so by their nature, control freaks tend to be attracted to politics. Then once they get into power, then they say, wow, now we can just go crazy and start controlling everything. So you know what? We need to kick those people out. We need people who believe in liberty and freedom to get into office, to restrain government, to keep it in its proper role and place so that everybody else can be freed up to make this country great again. Because it's not government that's going to make America great again. It's the people. We need to get the government off the backs of the people.
Well, I recently published a book called The Wrong Side of History, which is about the Syrian war and our alliance with some of the most brutal regimes in human history. And that it was based on an interview I did with Senator Richard Black. And he spent every day for the last 7 years researching Syria. And he was the chief prosecutor at the Pentagon and an expert in the Middle East and Africa. He wrote a letter to Assad back in 2014 and then went and visited him in 2016. And his conclusion was that if Assad falls, and that region falls, it's going to be a mass cleansing of the region. Over 4 million people are going to be slaughtered. Christians, moderate Muslims, a complete nightmare that we will back. I mean, a Holocaust that we will contribute to. What are your thoughts on that? And have you followed that in that level of detail? I mean, why are we aligned with some of these most brutal regimes? Saudi Arabia, Qatar, Turkey's doing some crazy things.
Yeah, well, ultimately, you know, what's going on in Syria is so much about Saudi Arabia and Turkey and Qatar, because they wanted Assad out for a long time. And, you know, if you remember back to 2011, it was the whole Arab Spring thing, right? It was, you know, going across the Middle East. And so at that point, they thought, well, hey, this is our opportunity. Let's get rid of Assad. And let's turn Syria into a full-blown Sunni nation, because Syria is somewhere around 70% Sunni anyway. But Assad's not Sunni. And Assad, he's Alawite, but then he's aligned with, you know, the Shiite powers, Iran specifically, and Hezbollah. And they thought, well, let's break up that axis of power and let's turn Sunni into a full-fledged Sunni nation and get them aligned with us, Saudi Arabia and Turkey and so on. And they thought, well, that would just be wonderful. And so, you know, they talked with the Obama administration, specifically for Hillary Clinton. She was Secretary of State at the time, and her team decided, hey, yeah, we're all in favor of this. And so what happened is, so money and arms ultimately started going into Syria, and so we started seeing these protests. And the peaceful protests started becoming violent, and the protesters started to be armed and started to get all these arms coming in from somewhere. And of course, we know where they were coming from. And and really, what happened was these the people, you know, and they talk about moderates over there. There's really no moderates, but most of the groups are in some way, shape, or form aligned with either Al-Qaeda or ISIS, or at least they're friendly with them. And but they're really radical Islamic jihadists of the Sunni variety, and they want to overthrow the Assad government and create their own, you know, basically Sunni paradise over there, which, as you said, would probably be a complete and utter nightmare, cleansing of the Christians. We've already seen all the refugees come pouring out of Syria, but the whole Syria refugee crisis is because of this whole thing, which, you know, goes back to 2011, which started the civil war. It's been raging ever since, about 6 years. And it was going according to plan at first. And Hillary Clinton was thrilled at first, and Saudi Arabia and Turkey, they were so excited because it looked like Assad was going to be overthrown.
But never mind all these people being killed. Who cares? We want power, get rid of that access of power, and who cares how many people die in the process?
Oh, I know. That's how they think. You know, this is how these people think, these control freaks, these people who want to, in the U.S. at least, that want to dominate the world, you know, move them around like they're chess pieces, not even concerned about all the people that are going to die. But yeah, we've seen all these people die, displaced from their homes, having to refugees.
They lived peacefully. It was one of the most peaceful countries on earth before this whole thing started.
Yeah, and Christians were free to do their thing. Different religious groups were free to do their thing.
No matter how bad you think Assad is, if you don't like them, they still were living side by side peacefully. That's amazing in the Middle East.
It really is. And Assad is certainly a bad guy. I don't want to say anything good about Assad, but it's not a case. There's no fundamental national interest for us in Syria. Ultimately, Assad's a bad guy, but the people who want to replace him are probably even worse, maybe much, much worse if you know, ISIS or a group affiliated with them took control.
Well, yeah, because he had a peaceful country where people are living side by side. If they take over, now we're talking ethnic cleansing.
Yeah. Oh, I completely agree with you, Sarah. And so it's been really bad for the Christians over there, really bad for other minority groups. And so, yeah, we've created this complete and total nightmare. And yet, you know, we are continuing to stick our nose into Syria. We just shot down a Syrian warplane for the first time since the civil war began, over the weekend. And so that, you know, and Russia says, well, now all U.S. warplanes, we're going to consider them to be targets, any that are flying over Syria. That just came out yesterday. And so there's an escalation, you know, and even though ISIS is almost, they're on their last legs in Syria at this point, because what happened, the Russians came in, Iran and Hezbollah totally turned the tide of the war. You know, the Syrian government started to win, and, you know, ISIS has just been devastated by the Russians in particular. But, you know, the U.S., you know, we got to stick our nose in there. We got to be in there bombing and fighting and whatever. But ultimately, the Trump administration, they want to be friendly with the Saudis. And the Saudis and Turkey are still desperate to find a way to kind of win this war, to pull things out, you know, or to salvage something from this war. So they very much would love the U.S. to get more directly involved. They are absolutely determined to get Assad out somehow. And so they don't want to give up, even though the war is totally going against the groups that they were funding and arming. So it's a giant mess. But, you know, the U.S., you know, by shooting that, you know, and in addition to shooting down that warplane, the Washington Post said overall there's been 4 incidents of conflict between the U.S. military and the Syrian military within the past month. So, if a conflict erupts, it's not just the United States versus Syria, but we could end up fighting Russia, we could end up fighting Iran, Hezbollah. I mean, it's just such a potential nightmare, but there's no reason for us to be there in the first place. There's no strategic interest. So It's so, I just wish we would get out of Syria, because we have no business being there. And, you know, hey, if we want to fight ISIS, we can, you know, go bomb them in Iraq. We can, you know, let the Russians take care of them in Syria. We can go take care of them in Iraq. You know, where we're there by invitation. We're there with permission in Iraq. But in Syria, no one ever gave us permission to bomb in Syria. No one ever gave us permission to put special forces in Syria. So we're there against the wishes of the Syrian government. I mean, it's such a mess, Sarah.
I mean, you know, why would we do that? I know, it just doesn't make sense. And why are we so hell-bent on having this alliance with Saudi Arabia? Is it oil? I mean, is it the petrodollar?
I think that's a big part of it, because if Saudi Arabia abandoned the petrodollar, I mean, they were the big ones that we kind of had to convince to adopt the petrodollar in the first place. And then if they end up abandoning it, that could be really bad for the petrodollar. You know, so it's the oil, it's the petrodollar, and they're the kind of the linchpin to the whole Islamic world, if you will. And so, you know, on that kind of level, it makes sense that we would want to have positive relations with them. But to me, Saudi Arabia is one of the most tyrannical regimes on the entire planet. There's no freedom of speech in Saudi Arabia. There's no freedom of religion at all. There's no freedom for women's rights. And the list goes on and on and on. I mean, you know, other than North Korea, there's not too many governments on the planet worse than Saudi Arabia.
And the UN put the Saudi Arabian rep as the head of the Women's Rights Council. What was that?
Yeah, that's absolutely insane. But the Saudis are very, very good at playing politics, very good at it. And, you know, and Saudi Arabia is very powerful. But in my opinion, the Saudi Arabia, to me, is one of the biggest problems on the entire planet. So instead, we're aligned with them. We're best buddies with them. But they're a deeply, deeply tyrannical regime. And they fund terrorism, terror groups, radical Islamic groups all over the globe. They've got their fingers in all these pots, all these bad things. I mean, to me, you know, really, they're... like I said, after North Korea, probably the worst government on the planet would be Saudi Arabia. And, you know, maybe some smaller nations would be up there too. But the Saudis are really, really bad guys.
Well, why did we do such a huge weapons deal with them, knowing that they're kind of bad guys?
I would have voted against it. I would have been completely against it. But, you know, for decades, whether Republican or Democrat, they've always been buddy-buddy with Saudi Arabia, whether it's Bush, whether it's Obama, whether it's Clinton, whoever it is, always buddy-buddy with the Saudis. And Donald Trump is trying, you know, looks like he wants to continue that on. But, yeah, it doesn't make sense at all, Sarah. And we'll talk about in a second that, you know, I want to go in and try to change some of these things. But yeah, if I had been in Congress and that arms deal had come up, I would have completely voted against it.
Well, you're running for Congress, right? Congrats. I mean, let's get into this then.
Yes, I haven't officially announced. So what I'm saying right now is that I'm very, very strongly leaning toward...
Okay. No official announcement yet. You're really, really thinking about it. Why are you thinking about it?
Yeah, well, it wasn't even on my radar, Sarah. It wasn't even on my radar, political things, running for office, any of this. I wasn't even thinking about it. But then a number of weeks ago, I was at my computer researching, because I'm always researching for my articles. And all of a sudden, I come across this article about this member of Congress that's going to step down so he can run for, or not run for his next term, so he can run for governor here in Idaho. So I thought, oh, that's interesting. That's where I live. So I'm looking at it. And I was like, oh, it's my district. And it's Raul Labrador. He's going to run for governor here in Idaho. And then so I'm reading this article, and it's all of a sudden like this, you know, I'm a Christian. I believe in God. And it's like almost like God was tapping me on the shoulder, or like I got this download where, or I got this wave of inspiration. I don't know how to describe it, but it's almost like, you know, I just felt like all of a sudden that this is what I was supposed to do. And so I was like, whoa, you know? And so I started thinking about it. I was like, you know, this makes sense because I've been working on these issues and trying to bring change for so long. And now this could be an opportunity, which I've been encouraging people to run for office. Maybe I need to step forward and put myself out there because I, you know, I have a lot of name recognition thanks to the internet and radio and television, all the things I've been doing. So I've, you know, all this, I've had all this name recognition. But ultimately, is it just about for me and my wife and our websites and what we're trying to do? Or is ultimately, can we use this, all this name recognition and all this exposure for something better, for to try to do some good? So I went downstairs and I said to my wife, hey, I'm thinking of doing this. You know, what do you think? And she was totally on board. She was really excited about it. And ever since then, I've been bouncing it off different people that I know and respect. And everyone said, hey, yeah, I think that this is a good idea. I think you could do a lot of good. And right now we're gearing up. We're looking at this. And if it's going to happen, it's going to happen very soon that I would announce that I'm running for Congress. And let's just say I'm very, very strongly leaning in that direction. But ultimately, it was what I was talking about earlier. You know, we're in a battle for hearts and minds. But ultimately, once we win the hearts and minds, we've got to start taking over the positions of power in our society that make the decisions. Because the people that are in Congress right now, for example, they're not listening to us. You know, the people in the legal system, they're not listening to us. So ultimately, as we wake people up, as we build this army of people that are awake, we need to ultimately start taking over, not just on the federal level, but state legislatures, school boards, local government, and start making better decisions for our society, turning us in a different direction. I think we can do that. Now, some of us will win, some of us will lose. You know, there's no guarantee of success, but of course, there's no guarantee of success in, you know, the Revolutionary War either, where, you know, who would have ever imagined a ragtag group of rebels could defeat the mighty British Empire, the greatest empire in the, you know, in the entire world. But they did it. They did it. They were passionate. They believed in their cause. They believed in liberty and freedom, and they did it. Or who would have ever thought that Donald Trump could have run for president and won, you know, where, you know, you had someone like George Bush, Jeb Bush. The establishment was all behind him. He spent $100 million, but he got trounced by Trump, you know, initially no one ever thought Trump had a chance, but you got to step out there, have the courage, because ultimately, Sarah, all that is necessary for evil to triumph is for good men to do nothing, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so if we don't do anything, well, evil's going to win. And the direction, if this country continues on the path that it's currently on, we don't have a future, in my opinion. This country is going to go down, and there's not going to be anything for our children, our grandchildren beyond that. So if we want to turn this country around, we've got to do something, and we've got to be willing to take risks, to put ourselves out there, to say, hey, you know, I'm willing to. You know, I'm willing to do this. I'm willing to risk embarrassment and risk losing, risk failure, risk, putting finances out there, risk public ridicule, whatever it is.
But you've already risked a lot of this, right? You've already risked a little bit of embarrassment, but just doing your radio or doing your public speaking and doing all this stuff, you've gotten yourself out there. Now you're going to take it to another level, where you're actually going to run and risk losing and feeling embarrassed. But you shouldn't feel embarrassed just because you run and lose. I mean, right? A lot of people run and then lose and then run again and win. But you're already out there. You're already got yourself out there and, you know, faced. You have to admit, this social media, and you must get negative comments on a daily basis like the rest of us. So you've already, you know, you're there.
Oh, it's true, Sarah. You know, people have been criticizing me for years, so, and I've got a thick skin, I can take it. But sometimes in politics, things can get really nasty.
People can go
after your wife, your child, your, you know, and so, you know, I've got a wife, I've got a 2-year-old daughter, And so, people can get really nasty on a personal level in politics. And so it would be a different level
I could
than I've
see you
heard.
being treated like Jason Lewis got treated here. I don't, you know, Jason Lewis, he was considered the little mini Trump, supposedly, and I think they're very different, but he was just smeared, and they took a whole bunch of stuff out of context. And actually, I interviewed him right before. He's in my district, and it made me mad because everything, I mean, they took it so far out of context to make him look like a bigot and a racist. And when he was meaning the exact opposite, they would take it something and he's like, oh, I didn't even mean it that way. I had him tell people what he meant it by. He won by large margins. People, that makes people mad because they knew him because he was, he, they knew what they were saying about him wasn't true. And whether you believed in his politics or not, that doesn't work. You have to be careful how far you take things out of context and spin things to where people know the person, they know it's not true.
Oh yeah, and ultimately, I have very strong opinions. I've been putting out articles for years, which are all over the internet. So, and it would be easy for people to come along, take something out of context, and say, "Hey, look how terrible this person is." But people who know my heart know that it wouldn't be true. But these kind of things happen in politics, so it's a risk to put yourself out there, and then you put all this time and effort and energy into something, and then if you don't win, it's like you feel like it's for that it went to waste or whatever. But ultimately, for those of us that love liberty and freedom and they're working toward is. It wouldn't be a waste because even if we lose, we win because we're getting the issues out there. We're getting the truth out there. We're proclaiming liberty and freedom and restoring the Constitution and our constitutional values and making America a better place. So ultimately, those of us who have the positive message. I mean, if you're someone that all you have is anger and hate and a negative message, and you put all your time and effort into a campaign and you lose, well, it is a waste. But if you've got a positive message, which I do, which those who believe in liberty, freedom do, those of us that are trying to turn America around, that are trying to, we've got a positive message. We've got, and ultimately the message is far more important than any one candidate. So if we're all working together to get the message out there to wake people up, we're going to win even if we lose.
Well, what do you think of some of the issues that might be affecting like the black community? Because I think they're a ripe community to look at things differently. I just because the Democrats claim they care about them, I don't see that based on where they've come. What do you think of things like mass incarceration? Because that's affecting them in great numbers. And there's double digits percentages of people in the black men specifically who are in jail and every family knows or has a family member who's been in jail. We have a mass incarceration issue when you look at it. We have 5% of the world's population and 25% of the world's prison population. What would you do with something like that? It makes me angry when I dived in, I took a deep dive into that. And we also have 8 to 10 times the rate of children in this country being incarcerated compared to other developed countries. It's completely decimating our communities and our families.
Oh, I completely agree with you, Sarah. And you kind of stole my thunder because that was the exact statistic that I was about to quote, where we've got this, our incarceration rate is the highest in the entire industrialized world. And this, and particularly it hurts disproportionately minority neighborhoods and communities.
Hispanics, Latinos, they get,
Hispanics as well, in
yes.
addition to African Americans. And so, and then, like you said, it hurts families because then the families, the fathers are missing because it's mostly men that are put in prison. I mean, yeah, we put a lot of women in prison too, but the men are away for years at a time. And then once you go to prison, if you're in prison for at least a year, the rate of divorce. It just goes through the roof. If you're
They're
going to be in prison.
destroying our families and our communities and the children. The school systems are just out of, they can't handle the mental problems that these children have.
Yeah. So people are nonviolent offenders. I mean, violent offenders are one thing, but people are nonviolent offenders. Let's find some other way for them to contribute back to society, whether it's community service, whatever it is, but to pay for what they've done, but without putting them behind bars, for an extended period of time, ruining marriages, ruining homes. Our prisons are mostly filled with nonviolent offenders. And then it costs so much. It's such a burden on the taxpayers, all these prisons. And then, of course, we got the private prisons, which I'm totally against too, because that gives an incentive. The people who run the private prisons want prisoners. And so then they lobby really hard to t you know,
That's
make
not
them
free market, is it? They thinking
not.
private, that's not what we're talking about when we're saying free market. That is
Not at
not
all.
the same thing.
Because while you have private prisons, then you create an incentive to toughen laws, to create more prisoners, to fill up those prisons. And so, yeah, we need to abolish private prisons. That is an area where government should it has the role. It shouldn't be in the hands of private people because it just creates an incentive to create more prisoners. But yeah, I completely agree with you, Sarah. We need a complete, and this is another area where we need a complete and total reform in throughout our society in the way we approach law-breaking, criminal behavior, all of this. Because, okay, yeah, if you've got someone who's going around stabbing people, yeah, we want to lock them up so they won't keep stabbing people. Or someone who's going around raping people, okay, lock them up so they're not raping people. But nonviolent offenders, hey, let's find another way to work with them so they can, pay for what they've done, but also can contribute to society, be there for their families, and not destroy marriages, not destroy families. I agree with you 100%. And so that's why, once again, we need to take over the power structures, not just on the federal level, but state and local throughout our country, so that we can start to make these changes. Because this is one area where we need huge change.
Well, and how about the 8 to 10 times incarceration rate for children? How did we get to that point where we're locking up children at that high, much higher of a rate than other developed countries? I mean, what's going on?
Yeah, these are children. They're not even adults, So yeah, kids make mistakes. And once again, if they're violent, well then, we don't want them going around committing violence. But if they're nonviolent offenders,
What are
and
we
it's not just
doing? Yeah.
it's crazy, and it's not just putting them in prison, but our public schools have become almost like prison camps. Where if a child acts up in class, sometimes you have the police coming in, dragging them out of the school in tears. And I've written articles about this in the past, just listing all these ridiculous things that children are getting arrested for in school. That would have been unthinkable when I was growing up. I mean, can we not handle our discipline problems? Yeah, if it's a violent issue with guns or knives or something, that's one thing. But if it's just, nonviolent behavior, if it's just putting gum on desks or some of the things that our kids are being arrested for are absolutely ridiculous. So yeah, we need a total cultural change where we need to get away from this police state mentality. Sarah, is one of my pet peeves, this police state mentality, which is just permeating throughout our society. It's incredibly, incredibly disturbing to me.
Well, I remember when we were growing up, and two boys would, and we see girls fighting too, they would get into fights, and the larger male teachers would come in and just take over and shove them aside and put them in their place, and they may be expelled or whatever, but they didn't need, if they have guns or something like that, that's a different deal. If it escalates out of control, but in general, they just come down and they take control of it. And I think right now these teachers don't feel that they have that ability because it's a just is different than it used to be, They would just take control.
Yeah, well, and these days teachers are scared to death to discipline at all because they'll get hit with lawsuits. It's such a politically correct environment, and so they almost feel like they have to call in, call in the law enforcement to handle it because they don't feel
Exactly.
like they can handle it themselves. So that's a whole nother side of the issue.
Yeah, that's so. What are other things are you going to be focusing on when you win and get into Congress and you run? What will you be focusing? What about our healthcare mess? What do you think of this thing?
Oh yeah, what a nightmare, you know, where we have Obamacare, which is a giant disaster, needs to be repealed, but then that doesn't fix our problem either, because we just go back to the mess we had before, where we've got this giant mess where the health insurance companies, and I'm not a big fan of the health insurance companies, where they're making $15 billion a year and they're making big profits by denying coverage, by when people do have something go wrong, saying, oh, you didn't do something quite correct, we're not going to cover this. You know, we've got a huge problem with the health insurance companies. We've got a huge problem with doctors being sued, these lawsuits, which get out of control. And what happens is, yeah, if someone has something go wrong, they need to be compensated, but they don't need $50 million. You know, what happens is we end up paying with it because malpractice rates end up going through the ceiling. That's a huge expense on doctors, on hospitals, whatever, and they have to pass that along to us, higher cost in the system. So, you know, we need legal reform, which neither the Republicans or Democrats want to touch because lawyers contribute so much to their campaigns. So, you know, that's a major problem there. But then it just goes on and on and on. But ultimately, our healthcare system is a giant mess. And what we need is a system. We never want a mandate where we're telling people, you have to buy health insurance. I'm totally against that. But we want a system where everyone that wants coverage can get coverage and they can get it much cheaper than it is today. Of course, Obamacare, what has Obamacare done? Raised rates dramatically through the roof. So yeah, we gotta fix healthcare. You know, another thing that I'm big on is all this NSA surveillance and spying. Just drives me up a wall where they gather all of our phone calls, all of our emails. This conversation right now is going to be on permanent record, everything at this giant data center out in Utah, where they literally just like a giant vacuum cleaner collect everything. And then if they ever need it, if they're ever investigating you or me, then they can pull up and say, hey, you know, and use it as evidence. So, you know, this unconstitutional surveillance, spying, the NDAA, you know, we've got, you know, at the airports, you know, with the TSA, you know, this whole police state, you know, I want to fight back against that with everything I've got. You know, that's a big thing for me. And other things, you know, and in so many ways, I'm going to continue on the same fight for liberty and freedom as Ron Paul and Rand Paul and kind of in that mold where I want to abolish the income tax. I want to abolish the IRS. I want to fight for the Second Amendment. I want to abolish the BATFE. You know, they've got a lot of letters in that one, but it used to be the BATF. But we, in my opinion, they've been one of the worst abusers of power that we've seen. You know, I want to fight for health freedom where, you know, a parent should not have to be forced to vaccinate their children with all these dozens of vaccines, which are potentially very dangerous and, you know, leading to major health problems, you know, promoting natural cures and remedies, you know, giving parents control over their, you know, the health decisions of their own children, you know, and then of course, CPS is out of control all over the country, snatching and grabbing children out of homes, away from good families, you know, for the most ridiculous reasons you can imagine. But, you know, getting the government off of our backs in all of these ways, reducing taxes as far as possible, eventually abolishing the income tax, abolishing the IRS, going to limited government, maximizing liberty and freedom, you know, and I could go on and on all day, Sarah, because, you know, I'm passionate about these issues. I'm passionate about these things. I'm passionate about liberty and freedom. This is supposed to be a country in the land of the free. I want to restore that. I want to restore our constitutional republic, which has been transformed into this giant monstrosity dominated by the big donors, the special interests, the Congress critters that are only concerned about their next election. You know, Washington, D.C. has become a cesspool of filth and corruption. And, you know, in my opinion, it's time to, and this may sound a little crude, but to flush the toilet. You know, we need to clean things up in Washington.
Well, and have people with good intentions. Because I don't care. People are going to have different value systems, different things that they're going to be, I don't know about value systems, but different opinions on how to deal with things. But if you have good intentions, then we're going to be okay. We're going to be okay.
And we can go a long way toward that by instituting term limits. Because right now we've got these career politicians, some of them have stayed in there for decades. You got like Nancy Pelosi and John McCain, which they're showing signs that they're mentally going downhill. But because this, you know, the system and the political machines they built where they can raise all this money, they can pretty much stay in there forever if they want. But we don't need a permanent ruling class of career politicians. So I'm in favor of term limits. And I would go all the way, Sarah, where I would love to see the day when we limit all members of the House, all members of the Senate to one term. That way, no one's worried about raising money for your next election because there's no next election. Instead, you go to Washington to do your job, then you hand the baton to the next person. And we constantly have a new influx of new ideas, new insights, you know, and there would constantly be a fresh inflow of innovation and of people with fresh ways of looking at things. So the control freaks that want a career in politics, that want to stay there forever and make it a career and just buddy up with the special interests, well, they would no longer have an incentive to serve. Instead, it would be, you know, it would start attracting citizen legislators, citizen servants that want to go in and actually serve the people, and much more kind of, I think, what our founders originally intended.
So where can people learn more about you? You have three different blogs, and are there other areas that could, okay, first of all, what are your three blogs? What do you do in each one? And then where else can people learn and see more about you?
Yeah, the website I'm primarily known for is theeconomiccollapseblog.com. Or if you just type the economic collapse into Google, it's the first result that comes up. That's mostly focused on our financial problems, the economic things we were talking about today. People can also find my writing on endoftheamericandream.com and themostimportantnews.com. A lot of people don't know about that one, but you can find all my articles gathered in a single place on there. And then on all the websites, you'll find banners, which will take you to Amazon where you can find my books. I've got three books out now and a new book coming out in just a couple of weeks. And then like we've been talking about, my campaigns.
What's the new book? Because I can put it up here.
Yeah, I'm not ready to release the title.
Oh, okay. Still working on it.
Yeah, but just in a couple weeks, it'll be out. So people want to watch for that. And then people also want to watch in just potentially a couple weeks, the launch of potentially, I got to say potentially, of my campaign. And people want to look for Michael Snyder for Congress. And there'll be a campaign website, potentially. I got to keep saying that. But keep your eyes open, and you'll see I'm going to run a campaign that's very, very different from your typical politician. So keep your eyes open for that. And if you live in Idaho, if you live in the first district here, which is all the western counties from the top of the state to the bottom of the state, if you're listening today and you want to get involved, you want to help out, you want to, you know, whatever it is, but you're excited about my campaign, feel free to reach out to me by email, theeconomiccollapseblog@hotmail.com, or just wait till the website goes up and you can contact us through there. But we're going to be building out a whole campaign structure throughout the entire district, and we need people to get involved. So if you want to get involved, reach out and contact me.
So what is the official launch? What would that look like? How will that take place?
Well, me and my campaign manager and my team are working on that right now, exactly what it's going to look like, how we're going to announce. But we're going to be, you know, as soon as we launch, we're going to be on lots of radio, television. We're going to see it on the websites that I have. You're going to see it on my Facebook account, both my personal one and my Facebook page. If I run, which I'm very strongly leaning in that direction, it will become my official campaign page. And so you're going to see it everywhere. But exactly how we're going to announce, we're still kind of strategizing on that.
Well, we're going to have you back then. Once the whole political season heats up, we'll get you back.
That sounds like a great plan, Sarah. I love to come back. I'm going to be looking to do as many interviews as possible to get the message out, because ultimately, I believe that I have a message that no one else is going to be able to compete with the message. So we just need to get the message out there so people can hear it.
Yeah, well, good for you. Congrats on everything that you have going on. I'll look for your book, and I hope you have a great 4th.
Well, thank you, Sarah. Yeah, the 4th, it's Independence Day, where we celebrate our independence, our freedom and liberty. And so, you know, but also let's look forward and look forward to restoring so much of our freedom and liberty that's been stolen from us.
Absolutely. Okay, well, have a great day. Thank you so much for joining.
Thank you, Sarah.
Okay, hold on.
Hope you enjoyed that interview with Michael Schneider. If you missed part one, you can go to my website, sarahwestall.com. I'll have both part one and part two up there later today. Part one's already up there. Part two will be up later today. And they'll also be available on YouTube and 100 different streaming and podcast channels. I also want to tell you that my Patreon account is up and going, and I'm really hoping to get more than just a few supporters. Hopefully there's more people out there that enjoy the show and want it to keep going. I started off at $1 for tier one. So $1 a month, you'll get my first two ebooks for free and access to exclusive content. One thing I'm doing now is on my Patreon account, I am going to list upcoming people that I have booked for interviews. So you'll see what the show is going to entail as we go along. Right now it's available to the public, but pretty soon I'm going to shut that off and it's only going to be available for people who are supporters of my channel. So that will be one of the exclusive perks that you'll get. So I want to tell everybody to have a great day and an amazing weekend.